This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. I'm here with Rui Madge. How you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. To figure out if I like this new Kanye album or not.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Jesus is King. What do you think?
I can't work out. I've done 4 or 5 listens now. Right. It's very samey, maybe. Yeah. The sort of church vibe.
It's got a
gets
church
a bit
vibe.
Repetitive, maybe.
Yeah, it's starting to grow on me a little bit.
That tune with Clips and Kenny G.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good.
Do you know something?
Finally got
the number of times I've been banging out Clips and I thought, do you know what? I just fucking, this needs some Kenny G, man.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only reason they got back together.
Anyway, we are joined by
Kenny G.
Oh my god, wow.
No, we're joined by the legend that is Jamie Cullum. Hello, how are you?
That's a nice intro, thank you. I'm very well. It's great to be sitting here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I hope you don't mind me saying this. Obviously, you're a very talented guy. But I didn't realise you're such a hip hop head, man. I mean, like, you know your shit, right?
Well, it's been a love of mine for a long time.
Yeah.
I know kind of corners of it pretty well, just as a fan, really.
Right.
And it was the kind of gateway drug for me to so many other types of music as well.
Right.
I was kind of weaving it all together in my head, knowing that we were doing this. And it's funny because I actually went to a gig on Saturday to see Jazzy Jeff DJ at Oval Space.
Yeah.
And he kind of, the way he makes his sets, it just defines everything about hip hop and the way I kind of got into it was like a kind of journey. And it was just a reminder of everything I love about hip hop, really.
Was he unbelievable?
He was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So not only was it just an amazing club set just to dance to. My wife and I haven't been out dancing for too long. We've got 2 kids and we used to go out dancing all the time, but we made a special effort to like go, we have to do this. It's like, you know, we've been together 13 years. We need to go out dancing.
Yeah.
And so we booked this in because I'd seen a bit of his set before. And so it was a great set to dance to. It's just the way he weaves everything in. It's a lesson. It's a lesson in music's DNA. And you're dancing and you're just taking it all in. It's amazing.
How did you find dancing with your wife? Because when I started going out with my wife, we used to go out like all the time. And then obviously we had kids and that's all over now.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, but now I'm nervous because I don't think I've danced in anger.
Would you dance with her? Just the two of you dance in a way.
We did.
Yeah.
But that was back. You know, that was back in the day.
If the music's good enough, it's literally we walk through. Bear in mind, like we're normally fast asleep,
right? Yeah,
by the time
we
kind of walk through the door of Overspace at like I don't know when it was, midnight or something.
Right.
I mean, not all the time, but most of the time, given that we've got 2 young kids.
Yeah.
And we walked in, and I mean, they were just they were playing MC Light or I don't know, just like a classic Tribe track or something.
Yeah.
And immediately we just both started dancing and didn't stop till we left.
Holy
wow.
Shit.
Yeah.
Well, when's the last time you did that with your missus?
I think I've done it at home a few times, not out.
Well,
but not for like 3 hours.
You two have just danced at home for the night?
Yeah, definitely.
You'd have a few drinks and have a little
Real hip-hop head is in my house, is my wife, actually.
Really?
She knows,
is that right?
I mean, her knowledge. Because she grew up and spent a lot of time in New York.
Right.
And so she attended a lot of like original shows and some of the best. And she knows this stuff.
And would you ever find yourself spending hours just the two of you dancing? Like Rupert does with his
wife? We can do a kitchen thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you not done a kitchen dance?
Middle-aged kitchen disco?
A boozy dinner?
No, shall I tell you what I do?
Mm.
And I've done this every day.
Go to bed.
I go to bed. I say to Lisa,
dance away.
Yeah, can you just... just spend some time on your own because I can't bear to be with you right now. No, what I do is I come down in the morning and I say, Alexa, can you play Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On? That comes on and then I start trying to dance with her and every day she tells me to fuck off.
It's not romantic.
It's a bit creepy, that song. It's like, you could have chosen something a bit... Don't you think it's creepy?
Something Barry White, maybe?
I love that tune, but... It's like a...
It's a bit,
yeah.
It's an aggressive breakfast move, isn't it? I agree with you, yeah.
Yeah.
No, totally.
Here's a little bit that we like to call, how did you get into hip-hop?
How did you initially get into hip-hop? What was your route into it? Because you're saying, what you've just said is, hip hop was your route into other stuff. So what was your route into that?
So I've always been a bit of a nerd.
Right.
So I've always been into like the DNA of like whatever music I was listening to. I was always quite interested in where it came from. And right. So I just remember being, I think I had a Now something, one of the first Now compilations or something. Nice. And the Tribe Called Quest track on there, Can I Kick It, was on it, right? And I was just like, the sound of the acoustic bass. I mean, obviously, it's you know, it's a sample from the Lou Reed song, but it was just the sound of it. It was like, it didn't sound like anything else. And I always loved drum sounds as well. Yeah. And around that time, I can't remember the exact chronology, but the Doggy Style Snoop Dogg album was kind of floating around. The Chronic was floating around because we weren't supposed to have it. You know, it was just like people were kind of swapping tapes and someone had like a... someone's older brother had photocopied the front cover of Doggy Style. And, you know, we would literally like
it was
go.
So rare.
We would, the one person who managed to smuggle their Walkman into school would be listening to them. We couldn't believe it. It just felt so, God, how innocent, huh? How innocent, you know?
It is weird, doesn't it? Everyone's journey into hip hop seems to be like passing a tape around like a porno mag. Mm.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like that sort of, it's just because of the,
because it's sort of dirty secret.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I think it was just the sounds on it. Didn't sound like all the other stuff that was in the charts, what I was listening to. And I realised, I think, I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was a friend of mine's dad who said, oh, that sounds like George Clinton. That sounds like this band Funkadelic. And he knew I was like really into music and he had loads of records and he was doing that thing where...
So how
was,
old were you then? Was this?
I would have been at this time about 10, 11, 12. Around but, that
and
kind
even
of time.
At that age, you had that kind of real musicality sort of interest?
My older brother was really into music as well. And so he was getting into acid jazz and we always had the radio on, so we listened to Westwood, we listened to John Peel at the time. You know, we were kind of gravitated towards kind of really good music. What I definitely thought was. And as soon as I kind of heard that this music was made up of other music, and I started to find out what the other music was, it completely blew my mind.
Right.
And so when it came to like hearing Tribe Called Quest for the first time and hearing what I didn't realise was Bob James's Nautilus and Herbie Hancock's Chameleon and all this stuff later that I discover, David Axelrod. Yeah. Hearing David Axelrod, you know, that when you play someone the original David Axelrod track, The Edge, and then you play him Dre's, which track is it? What's it called? When you play in the original source material, they're like, no way, you know? And I was lucky enough to kind of just be exposed to that a little bit earlier. And it was a time when people weren't really buying records. You go and pick the stuff in Oxfam. I found a record store in Bristol near where I lived that the guy was so happy to show me where all the, you know, Al Green and Axelrod, Nat Adderley, Cannibal Adderley, all that stuff that they were using to sample. And it just became my obsession, really.
So were you like crate digging for all the originals and stuff?
I would say I was like mildly crate digging. Now I know what real crate diggers are. Now I've really met them and I know the level of obsession.
Full time,
I just was really. I would hear those breaks, like I would hear the Far Side, for example, and you know they were doing their own breaks. The little interludes were just piano and drums.
Yeah.
And I met a drummer who lived in the next town, and we would get together and try and do, you know, I try and play the bit on the piano, he'd try and play the bit on the drums. We just wanted to play the breaks, really.
Yeah.
And we just wanted to find more and more of them. And as soon as we could nail one of them, it just felt like we were kings, the kings of Wiltshire.
Coming soon.
Exactly.
It just
felt like a bit of a secret club. And then the jazz thing kind of came, you know, because the jazz thing was so woven into all the hip hop I loved.
Yeah.
You know, Gangstar.
Just got a new album out, haven't they?
It's your disappointment with the cut. It's gonna blow your mind. It's so great.
Is it banging?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. I hate telling good people bad news. Word to God, if Big and Pac was still here, some of these weirdos wouldn't act so cavalier. We all know that the game has changed. It's crazy out here, rap's got a bad name. Think about it, what if Bling never happened and the true artists were getting rich from rapping?
Word to God, some should give. Let's delete the politics so real hip hop can live.
It's such a great record, and actually, it's amazing he's managed to do it, actually, though, yeah. with that.
Because normally you sort of think it's going to be like, it's going to be something you got overheard when Guru's in the toilet or something. Do you know, like the like scratching around for vocals and stuff? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Voicemails.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just Guru making an order at IHOP. It's sort of looped it up. But it's a great record, it's wicked.
It is so good. And actually, you know, just mentioning Guru, obviously he did those solo records after the Jazz Metallica records. Now it was right around the time the acid jazz thing was happening. And again, my brother was kind of bringing a lot of that stuff home. And then I think we were at Phoenix Festival or an early Glastonbury Festival, and Guru was doing that Jazz Mataz project with like Courtney Pine, a few of the kind of British jazz people.
Yeah.
And again, us, do you remember Us Three as it sounds a little bit
Cantaloupe.
Sounds a little bit corny now, but it was still like, again, it was all those original Blue Note records that I was getting. You know, I got some from someone's dad, you know, I'd heard a couple at the back of my mum and dad's car, and it just all kind of percolated in my brain and was really exciting.
Is acid jazz still getting performed? Is that still a active genre?
It's still a very, very active genre. Yeah. More so than it has been for years, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Jamie's actually, I've got to be honest with you, the way you said that to Rupert was like, had a bit of venom in it.
Yeah.
More so than it has.
More so than
it has done for years, actually, Rupert. So why don't you stick your fucking question up your arse?
I just thought it'd be quicker to find it. I was going to Google it later, but I thought it'd be quicker just to ask.
Well done. Jamie seems like a really chilled out
until he starts.
I sort of killed the rhythm of the conversation.
My memory of acid jazz.
So what was not the first? Was Doggy Style the first hip hop album you really got into?
I did get into it, and I loved it, but I kind of feel like I loved it because everyone else loved it, and actually, I've kind of gone back to it. And it still sounds great, but I think it was probably, I was the right age when Midnight Marauders came out, the Tribe record, in, I think it was 93.
Midnight Marauders.
And I just remember that was just one of those ones I had on my Walkman, just playing kind of over and over again. I like them brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, a Haitian. Name is Fight Dog from the Zulu Nation. Told you in the jam that we could get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town. You got DVD all on your bedroom wall. But I'm above the rim and this is how I ball. A gritty little something on the New York street. This is how I represent over this here beat. Talking about you. Yo, I took you out. The difference between Midnight Marauders and Doggy Style, obviously, don't get me wrong, Doggy Style's a great album. Yeah.
But Midnight Marauders, you can go back to now. And you can, and also lyrically, you could play that to someone and go, and this is like, it sounds like adult music, right?
Yeah.
Grown up music, I mean. Whereas Doggy Style, it's very difficult to go back to now. If you say to somebody, I'm just going to put them on the albums I used to listen to, bang out some classics.
Wrong Doggy Style.
Guess who's back in the motherfucking house?
That could be your new tune for your breakfast walk-in.
Yeah, yeah.
We know the intro. What's that? That song, Bathtub.
Yeah.
You can put that on with Let's Get It On in the morning and see how you feel.
Alexa, can you play It Ain't No Fun? So it was Tribe that really got you in.
It was Tribe, but at the same time, I really loved Tupac as well.
Right.
Because I think he was... I love Nas as well. You know, Pete Rock, anything produced... I got into the names of the producers, so I loved anything that was produced by Pete Rock or DJ Premier.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to get beats that I kind of would love, and I would listen to... It's really interesting. I listened to the productions and loved the productions.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to kind of get into the rhyming in quite the same way.
Right.
Until I kind of went out, really.
Yeah.
And I didn't go out for years because I always looked like a fetus, you know, for so long. Like, even when I was like 18, it was like, nah, that's not a real passport. It's a real passport. But when I discovered the music on the dance floor as well, it renewed my kind of love for hip hop, really.
Yeah. Is there a conflict with the fact that you love jazz so much and the art of sampling? I mean, has that ever been an issue for you, or are you able to reconcile that? Because some people see sampling as theft, essentially. Do you know what I mean? And you're sort of taking a great loop and just chopping it up and shouting over the top of, you know, that was always the accusation made of hip hop. So what's your take on that?
I think it's no longer an issue. I think it was for a bit, but particularly recently, there's so many musicians now that kind of jazz musicians, you know, Robert Glasper, I don't know whether you come across him, but he's definitely someone who has kind of legitimized, like, he's bringing and a jazz club experiences, like playing all the music of Jay Dilla, and like he's got a band with Common, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's the kind of stuff that Questlove has been talking about for years as well, you know. And now it seems to be, you know, something that's well established. It's almost like recycling itself again. You've got bands like Bad Bad Not Good kind of focusing on breaks, but as a kind of instrumental jazz band. And there's loads of like modern, you know, modern jazz acts now that are massive, like, you know, Kamasi Washington and, you know, even people from this country like Shabaka Hutchins, who are kind of referencing. It's kind of why jazz has got so interesting, because it's starting to reference the future as well as the past. And but it just feels like its own thing. And actually, it's something in Britain I think we do really well. You've got an artist like Little Sims, who I know I haven't heard it yet, but I know you just interviewed. I love her.
Yeah.
And just it just feels like her music is kind of classic, but also of now and also looking towards the future. And, you know, I think it's no longer... You know, for me, I was always into hip-hop. And if I was so painted into a corner of being like this kind of... I mean, even my earliest interviews after I did like the Michael Parkinson show, I was saying, actually, well, I love jazz, but actually I kind of got into it through hip hop. People like, no, don't talk about that. Don't talk about that. It's really confusing. Okay. It's really, don't talk about that on Lorraine. Okay. Please don't mention DJ Premier on
it's weird, isn't it? Because I did like, I went on Radio 2, been interviewed by Jay Wiley and Simon Mayo. And they asked me to do like a song. They asked me to... a song that I liked or something. So I asked for like some Public Enemy or something. They said, we can't do that. I ended up putting like a Stevie Wonder song, which is a great song.
Yeah.
But it's weird, isn't it? Hip hop has been around for such a long time, but it's still like a bit like, I don't know.
Considered niche in certain areas.
It's just sort of not like, I mean, I get it from their point of view. They see you as, you're Jamie Cullum. We can't have, I don't know. Is it confusing for an audience, for a member of the public to process that you got, that you're into hip hop as well?
I don't know, because it's always weirdly been like a small part of like whatever I've done. You know, I think the thing that surprised people, I had Roots Maneuver on a track that I did for an album about 6 or 7 years ago. Your love for sale.
Taskmaster, give me that raw uncut love. Fly the dove higher than high and never come down. Willing and ready to stick that neck out. Situation gets sticky now. We get the heck out. All grown up now with a feeling for the deepness. Restless, looking for a brand new outlook. Paradise without, paradise within. The devil's design is enticing things.
And, you know, anyone who's sane knows Roots Maneuvers, you know, one of the best. And I think, you know, there were definitely some people who are fans of mine who are a bit like, well, why is he trying to do that?
Yeah,
you know, for me, I'd resampled by playing live the bass line from One Hope.
Yeah.
And did a version, a Cole Porter tune over the top, and then got him to rap on it, right? No. And so in my head, that's like the ultimate kind of like jazz musician's move, where you're improvising over a theme that you love. And in my case, it was a hip-hop riff I've had in my brain since I heard it in 2001 or whenever it came out. It's never left me. It still sounds like one of the best beats, I think. I mean, it has been that, but to be honest, I've always, even when I came out and I was doing jazz, I was playing in other bands, rock bands and pop bands. And I was, you know, sideman in other people's bands, and people would misunderstand me when I'd be off doing jazz, and I've always just kind of been a bit quite myopic and just gone, well, I don't really care. I just want to make stuff that makes me feel good and references the stuff that I love and try and get better at it, really.
And are you conscious of what people's expectations are of you then when you're making stuff?
I'm conscious of making sure I do something that sounds authentic, really.
Right.
And as much as I love hip hop and beats and turntablism, as much as I love that, I know that that's not necessarily the best thing I could bring to the table. But I've done collaborations with loads of different people in that world, and that's kind of scratched that itch for me. And you know, when you're in a room with some of the people who are really good at this stuff, you know, like the best, you know, it means you think, I need to get into this and do it as well. You know, you're seeing the masters at work. You know,
it's almost insulting, isn't it?
It is. It's like, and I think actually that's the nice thing about getting older, is you don't feel I can enjoy it without feeling like I have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm finally. kind of getting to a point where I'm really focused on the future of what it is I want to do.
But there's a difference though between you getting Roots Manoeuvre to appear on a track that you've sort of repurposed.
Mm.
There's a difference between that and like Cullum spitting bars. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's funny that because I've recently did a cover of X Factor, Nice for What.
Right.
So I played the Lauryn Hill, and then I kind of segued straight into the Drake track. I sung the rap.
Yeah.
Everybody get your motherfucking roll on. I'm a shorty and she doesn't want a slow song. Had a man last year, life goes on. Haven't let that thing loose, girl, in so long. You've been inside, know you like to lay low. I've been peeping what you bring to the table. Working hard, girl, everything. It was only afterwards, we do this thing called the Song Society, which is where I try and learn and perform a cover in 1 hour and put it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we did that with that song. It's only after I thought, oh man, are people gonna like rip the shit out of me between this? Because it just seemed really, it's like, why wouldn't you take me?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you? No, my musical brain was up. And I only afterwards I thought about whether people would think it was rubbish or not. Which is probably a good thing, right?
That's good. It is good, yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever had your music sampled by rappers?
That's
a great question, Rupert.
Thanks, man.
I had a really interesting thing happen with I was on Joe Wiley. When Joe Wiley did the Live Lounge, they asked me to do a cover for live, you know, like a modern cover.
Yeah.
And I did Pharrell's Frontin'.
Right.
And she it came out really well, and she ended up playing it to Pharrell when he was on the show. And he heard it. This is 2004 or whatever it was.
Right.
And he heard it. And then he ended up taking it to Questlove, who ended up like turning it back into Frontin', like club version. And so he was spinning it for a while in his DJ
set. God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a nice moment. And then I ended up working with Pharrell after that on his solo album, In My Mind, that he did in 2000, whenever it was, I can't remember, mid-2000s.
That's cool as shit.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I felt like I'd been beamed in, like by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, it was really. I was so out of my depth.
You must have had so much swagger when that was going down, man. Can you imagine that? Pharrell
and it coming
had the
on
record
in the club
played
as well.
Back to him and likes it. Just even you just saying, and then Questlove took it and fucking, I just got hard on just listening to that.
Yeah, I've got
you
one now.
Like
yeah,
you're both sitting like
it's
it.
Pretty, yeah.
With their hands.
It's pretty weird, isn't it?
It's amazing. Yeah. Holy
no, it was.
Shit.
I mean, I look back on it now. I look back on it, but I'm also, I felt like when I had the opportunity. So I met with him a couple of times.
Right.
And it's so interesting. Like the media at the time were really fed up with the kind of soft jazz types that were in the kind of the top 10. And I remember some music journalists writing about like, oh my God, Pharrell's just shown he's got terrible taste because he likes Jimmy. Because
he was on
the red carpet at the Brits and someone said, anyone you're looking forward to meeting tonight at the Brits? He went, Jamie Cullum. And people were like, what? Do you know who's here? Yeah. And we met and he asked me to come out to Miami to work with him for 2 weeks. And my label were just like, they could not believe it. Because at that point, the Neptunes were like responsible for
85%
exactly.
Hip hop bangers at that time, yeah.
And I got there, and he was, you know, he wasn't married at that point. He was like living the life that you would expect him to be. And I was literally dropped into that world with him in Miami for 2 weeks, and I wasn't confident enough in myself, and I did not impress myself upon the situation anywhere near as much as I wish I would have
really,
done.
Really, yeah.
Yeah. Because actually we didn't make
because
any good
Because you sort of couldn't believe it was happening.
I couldn't believe it was happening. I just wasn't ready. I wasn't like assertive enough. I didn't say when I didn't like something. I just was like...
Really?
Well, I was in a room with Pharrell, like, around the time of, like, Milkshake and, you know, Justified and...
Just agreeing with everything, yeah.
You know. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm the guy that did played Cole Porter on Michael Parkinson, who loves hip-hop and nobody knows. apart from, you know, Pharrell now. He would, like, wheel me out on stage to sing Frontin' with him at, like, festivals and you know he was like on the phone to he would be calling up Jay-Z and getting me to play down the phone it was so weird. And in the meantime we wrote two songs that neither of us liked very much and I never ended up using and the only real thing that exists that we did together was a track on his album In My Mind called You Can Do It Too which then Questlove then remixed as well which is it's a really I'm so glad it exists because it reminds me of doing it.
You Never in a million years imagine I get my thrills by listening to squeals or the PJ wheels. As we land, I duck down, I stick my head up, my dick is being sucked down by a bitch named What Now. I look in her eyes, and the eyes are like an orange star. Look at the reflection of my foreign car, the R&R. I stick my feet out, you know the babes that's made of ill. You know the new shit with Negro face right on the hill. I
wasn't. So do you, is that sort of a thing where you think, if that was to happen to you now, that you'd be you'd sort of be a bit more definite about your taste and your sort of feelings on stuff?
I think I would, because I got the impression what he wanted to do was do something like more in the jazz kind of thing. You know, I'd currently been listening non-stop to Lord Willin, the Clips album, which is one of my favourite hip-hop albums ever. And, you know, no sampling on that at all. It's just bare, you know, I love the kind of non-quantized beats of the Neptunes. And I just thought, if we could get like one of those beats and maybe I could put some interesting chords on it. You know, so the kind of chords that are in the middle of fronting, which is what drew me to that song in the first place. And then, you know, we could do some top lines together or something. I don't know. I just, that's what I, in my mind, I wanted to happen. But I just kind of sat back and I was like, yeah, that sounds great, man. Do you like this? Yeah, I do, you know? And then he'd be working on 10 different things at the same time. Then we'd go to some crazy party and I'd be... You know, it was 2 weeks. I was lost, and it was kind of inspiring, but also slightly dispiriting at the same time.
But still amazing.
It's up there with the top 10 experiences of my life.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you're obviously like a cool guy,
and obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that.
But you know, you sort of mentioned like the press talking about Pharrell's got terrible taste or whatever. Do you feel like you get tarnished with this sort of uncool, or you have been in the past? I think you're, in terms of your coolness, I think you're going for a renaissance now. But then, you know, you sort of refer to
now. I'm 40. Great.
But you refer to a time when, like, you know, you're sort of cynical. Is that something you're conscious of or upset about? Or
I was lucky because I was such a I was always a nerd and always really into just like getting into stuff in like kind of minute detail. And I was always surrounded by musicians, and I never really kind of got into a space where I was hanging out with tons of people I didn't like.
Yeah.
Or like liked me for one reason or another. I was generally kind of hanging out with more or less the same people, doing more or less the same things.
Yeah.
And so I could kind of tune it out quite a lot. I was aware of it because there was just this moment where, you know, also at the time, I was in the charts, Katie Mellor was in the charts. Like there was a bet, Michael Parkinson's favorite hits, you know, and I was on it, you know, and there was just this kind of moment where that kind of took over a little bit. And, you know, in my head, I was just like, hey, man, all this music with like cool chord changes is here. And God, I can't believe it. I was just a bit guileless, really. I was not media trained. I didn't have anyone doing my hair or buying me clothes. I was just literally like a music kid.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of tuned it out. I was aware it was going on, but I think I had enough kind of joy in the music making part. I just felt so lucky. And also I was out of the UK so much. I toured America for years.
Yeah.
And I had a totally different type of career there, which, you know, which worked really well. So I was able to kind of tune that out and be aware that that's the kind of thing that can happen in the UK. And I just thought, well, just get your head down and do stuff that you like.
Yeah.
And certainly as I got older and I just realized that I had a long career, I felt like, well, that's all I ever wanted, was to play music as long as I could.
Yeah, yeah. You sort of stop giving a shit, don't you, as you get older as well?
I think you have to, otherwise it's a bit exhausting. Isn't it's a bit tiring.
Yeah, I mean, you learned that really early on, didn't
quite
you?
Quite a young age, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Stop giving a shit.
My 20s.
Yeah. Just fucking let go. Completely let go.
What about you, though? You have to as a comedian, though, don't you?
It's a weird one, because, like, you know, when you're doing stand-up, you're sort of trying to break through, and then you start getting a bit of TV. You start getting offered, like, other things. And then you're constantly trying to make that decision about, these are good opportunities, and I know this industry's fickle and I don't know if I'm going to get offered this stuff forever, and you've got to balance up against if it's something you actually want to do. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes you have to just start saying no because you just don't think it's right, or, you know, and then you start, hopefully you move into a position where you're picking and choosing what you're doing and doing the stuff you really want to do. But it's really easy to do a load of shit. And I've done loads of stuff, arguably too much, like, you know, at the moment. And you sort of think, am I fucking up my brand here? Do you know what I mean? Not brand, but you don't think of it like that, but you sort of think, I want to be able to stand by everything I do,
yeah,
and not look back on things and think, I did this because it was an opportunity, or I did it for the money, or I did it for the profile,
it's
or whatever.
Such a hard thing.
It's a really difficult thing to do.
It's such a hard thing to do. I mean, you know, I think about, like, artists that I respect so much, Nick Cave, Tom York, I don't know, any of those types of artists who are so kind of like, I'm only doing this.
Yeah.
And I kind of, in my dreams, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to turn down co-hosting The One Show for sure. No, I'm not. I'm going to do it.
Good.
Because it sounds fun. And I get to interview Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, great.
But the thing is,
of course.
Maybe your brand becomes like someone who's up for it and I'll give it
a
go.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
You know,
the truth is that as soon as you start to second guess what you should be doing, that's the problem. You just do what you think you should do.
Yeah.
And that's the truth of it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, if you start thinking, I wonder what people who like me would expect me to do, then you're fucked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just have to do what you think.
I totally agree with that. You have to follow your inner guide, man.
Exactly. Yeah. But finding that is difficult.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, God. I got so depressed about my career.
End of podcast. Thanks for coming in.
You got one of the podcasts that everyone likes to listen to, though.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. Yeah. It's the least lucrative of our endeavours, isn't it?
Is it the most fun?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's the one we get the most abuse about as well.
Oh yeah. Oh, I sent you one the other day. What was that?
Why'd you get abuse?
Because people, I don't know what it is about podcasts.
It's free.
You must get this with a radio show, right?
On my first radio show, like, 9 years ago, I was so nervous. I got Billie Holiday's birthday wrong by like 50 years. Like, she basically would have still been alive at like 15 or something. And when I say I got crucified, it's literally just a slip of the tongue. He knows nothing about jazz. Yeah.
Well done, BBC.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you killed Humphrey Littleton. Got that pretender up. So what do they get? You get abuse because it's like that people don't. What about the hip hop aspect of it?
The irregularity, I think.
Irregularity. Also, expressing the wrong opinions.
Yeah.
Not talking about groups that people want you to talk about.
Talking about Kanye too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the live concert that he did the day after the album came out?
Oh, there's a film of it.
Was that the launch thing? Yeah.
That should have been the album, if you ask me.
Really? Yeah.
The whole live concert with the gospel choir is amazing.
Because you get it in that context.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, it's wicked.
Hey, man, what's your favourite hip-hop album?
What would you say is your favourite? You've mentioned Clips, one of your favourite. What would you say your favourite hip-hop albums of all time?
It is a genuinely hard question because there's loads of different beats. So obviously the Tribe one I mentioned, the Night Marauders, but I really love Madlib. The producer Madlib, I love the albums he made under the alias of Quasimoto. So the Further Adventures of Lord Quaz, Yes Sir, those two are pretty. Like, I keep going. I'll put them on anytime. Mad Villain as well, album he made with MF Doom.
Yeah.
So nasty that it's probably somewhat of a travesty having me. Then he told the people, "You can call me Your Majesty. Keep your battery charged. He know it won't stick, yo. And it's not his fault you kick slow. Shoulda let your trick hold, chick hold your sick glow. Plus nobody couldn't do nothing once he let the brick go. And you know I know that's a bunch of snow. The beat is so butter. Peep the slow cutter as he.
They're the ones I will just never kind of stop.
You're the first person since our first ever guest to mention the Mad.
I'm so surprised. I mean, he's literally one of the best hip-hop. Yeah. I mean, I think it's like undeniably one of the best hip-hop records ever.
Yeah, that's so mad, though, isn't it? Episode one, and now the last episode. We've come full
circle. Breaking news.
Oh, yeah, we should say as well, this is the last ever episode.
Ever.
The symmetry of the universe. I've literally closed this up with an obscure Les Field hip-hop reference.
What is it about those? Because there is a common theme here, is you love that. Is that type of production, isn't it? That sort
it's the type of production, but I think I love... So what I realised about the rappers is the kind of rapping I love is where not only the language is really exciting and like... you know, kind of almost like psychedelic, which is MF Doom in a nutshell. It's when they rap over the bar lines really like, it reminds me of jazz drumming. It reminds me of the great turntablists as well. Like, and that's what Jazzy Jeff was doing at the gig the other night. Just, he's playing like a jazz drummer.
Yeah.
And again, my kind of slightly, you know, autistic brain is like jumping on all the, all the little kind of ways they all match up with each other, but also listening to anything Madlib does is always, it always feels like a lesson because he's referencing so many other records. That track, The Return of the Loot Digger, again, like I remember hearing that and writing down the names of the artists I hadn't heard and the ones that I did know, like when he talks about Grant Green, I was like, yes, I know Grant Green.
Some niggas be sampling the same ass shit, some niggas be looping up them played out hits, but that's more for me plus the peeps I'm down with. We strive to create some way out of this shit that you ain't heard yet. We're building up respect, then come the check, then I cash chips, you know I go get more stacks of wax. Fuck CDs, cassettes, 8 tracks and dash. Yo, fuck all that shit.
And all that surrounds Stone's Throw, the record label, and now again that label that reissue all this stuff that is out of print that hip hop artists have been sampling for ages. But Doom is just... He makes me laugh.
Yeah.
He makes me kind of feel kind of disgusted. Like, it kind of speaks to my inner pervert.
Yeah.
It's just kind of everything in there. Yeah. And it reveals different things to me each time.
It's funny because like a lot of the hip hop you sort of talk about, or you like, it's like Tribe and Doom and all that. Their lyrics are obviously amazing. They're obviously great. But they fit, they're like an instrument, aren't they? Like, they fit in with the track. Whereas like some hip hop, the track is almost sort of low down and then the lyrics sort of stomp all over it. MF Doom just sort of like flows in and out of it. It's so, he goes off beat.
He's like Biggie in a way in that sense, isn't he?
So great.
So who would you say is the one, more like the one where they just kind of dominate the track and
that's a good question. I guess like someone like Jay-Z or someone like that. I think very much sort of like, you know, it's about him, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not sort of, obviously Jay-Z is like great. I think with like MF Doom, I could listen to MF Doom and not understand what he was saying, and still very much enjoy
the sound.
What he's doing. Yeah, it's the sound of it. It's something about the rhythm of what he does. I find really addictive. It's like the same thing with, there's a rapper like, I've talked about him before, but Sean Price. There's something about the way he flows and how he sits in the track that I don't care what he's saying. I just love how it sounds. You know what I mean? And it's sort of, yeah, I think that Doom's got that, man. He's got it by the bucket load. What are you listening to now at the moment, hip hop wise?
I love the Rhapsody album.
Which is
amazing. Yeah. I mean, I loved her for a long time. I love that mixtape she did with DJ Premier in 2010. She did one, but I think new record is great. That's played a lot in our house.
When the MCs came to live out their name, inscribed in the halls and the walls of fame, balancing life, wrote both the yin and yang. Hands buried the man and they raised the sun to rain. That's a play on words. They say herb ain't all the same. Slaves in prison and they some unchained, while everybody in my gang is star DJ Prime, screaming through the sunroof, money still ain't a thing.
Little Sims, I think is so good. And also, I've been one of the judges on the Mercury Music Prize for the last few years, and so obviously Dave won it this year. I think it's great, and Skepta won it a few years
ago. Have you been on it for the last few years? Have you?
Yeah, 3 or 4 years. Yeah.
How heated do those discussions get? Does it get?
Yeah, they get. Yeah,
really?
It's tough. Yeah, the Skepta year was a fascinating one because it was basically ended up being between Skepta and David Bowie, who just died, obviously.
Right. Holy shit.
And it was like how
this, I never thought it was. Yeah, see I that
mean, yeah, no, exactly. And it was really interesting. I mean, I'm kind of sworn to secrecy,
of course,
really, but
at the same
time, I think I'm glad Skepta won that year because I think I think a lot of the most interesting things in hip-hop are happening in the UK, personally.
Yeah.
I love Sampa the Great as well. You know Sampa the Great? Yeah.
The Lace Lady, travel with Grace, baby. I can't afford to cover the course. Of course, maybe settle that one in court. Because judging by the basics, y'all already comfortable, stuck up in the matrix. Shit is basic. Past credentials, but understand your favorite rapper, peep my gold potential. I'm out of shame. Been past it, trying to fit the circle because I don't know how to act shit. Half of y'all was steady, insecure, don't try to backflip.
Just we're, because hopefully we're getting, on. We're getting her on, yeah.
And the new Gangsta record, obviously, we've talked about, which is, which is epic. So they're the kind of new things. But I know you talk about Drake a lot on the show. I really like Drake because I really love melodies. I think he's a really great rapper, but I think some of his melodies are like are beautiful as well.
Yeah. Well, I found that about. I keep talking about this, and I've been slagged off a bit for this now. Actually, talking about abuse, but Post Malone, right?
Yeah.
That guy can write a catch.
Yeah, he can. That song Circles is a great
tune. Crazy. Yeah,
no. But I like Mac Miller as well. And I used to get shit for that as well. But.
No.
I'm not super into the major auto-tuned kind of trap stuff.
I can imagine you find that utterly abhorrent.
I don't find there's a couple of Sway Lee kind of tracks that I'm like I like the weirdness of them. I really like and the kind of boldness of the production, or like the boldness of how like unfinished some things are.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wish I could unfinish something that much. Just literally sounds like they spent 10 minutes on it. Went, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think I've only relatively recently got into this whole idea of the musicality of rapping in itself. Do you know what I mean? Because I always used to just be like, I don't want a bar spitter to talk about how he's going to like chop heads like in all this shit. And then like I was watching that. Have you watched any of that Rhythm and Flow?
Oh
on that?
My God. Yeah. I haven't yet.
But no, it's ready to watch.
Mate, it's fucking unbelievable.
It's so good.
Cardi B.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
She's amazing.
So it's Cardi B. Chance the Rapper and T.I., right?
T.I.
are the judges, right? And Chance the Rapper is just like, I would say he's like the closest to us in it. Like, he sort of like talks about, he's like you in terms of like thinking about the musicality of it. And T.I. is just sort of like, I found your music very delicious in its predilections towards lyricism. And his capacity to balls making me want to shake the groove thing. You know, he's like very sort of like excessively verbose, isn't he? Like, my preconceptions about you have proved to be unjustified, young homie. And shit like that, right? And then Cardi B. She's fucking... She just goes, I like you.
Yeah. And then hands over to the other judge.
You first came out, I didn't know. But then I was like, oh, he did it.
And then makes a weird noise.
I feel like I don't need to watch the show now.
Right, you've got to watch it. But with all of these guys that are trying out for it, there's like some guys that are just like spitting like flames, like, you know what I mean? Like straight bars. But the thing is about that is all of their tracks were like that, where there's some people that just sort of like had like a, they were sort of playing with it a lot more and playing with what you could do with rapping. And there's so much more interesting, do you know what I mean? It's like, I think hip-hop is, I know you're saying a lot of the best stuff's happening in the UK, and I do agree with that, but it's just, it seems to have pushed, it was stagnant for a while, and it feels like it's evolving again, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's funny enough, I was just listening to Ocean Wisdom.
Wisdom's amazing.
Oh,
man. Yeah,
my God. Yeah. Again, like, it just feels like that kind of that playfulness is back.
Yeah,
that Fat Boy tune.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It's so good. There it is, I'm in the pocket right here. Right in the cribs and the profit right there. Trying to be the wish, you need to stop it right now. Combining with me is just fucking unfair. I didn't make it clear, in fact, I made it unclear. I think I got the message when I cut them on Claire. I think she got the message when I bust along there. Monogamy is boring when the hoy wants there.
The thing I'm worried about with that Fat Boy tune, if I'm being honest, is that in the video,
because
you've not seen the video.
No.
So in the video, he's on like a, I think he's like a mobility scooter, and he's like in a fat suit, just sort of like all chubbed up throughout the whole video. And I thought, this is probably Ocean Wisdom's most commercial tune. So that means there's a high chance
that's the first thing they're going to see with him, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no bit of which he reveals in the video, as far as I could say.
That's kind of how I feel about the suit I accidentally wore the first time I was on telly. And no one told me it looked shit.
What was it?
And the fact that I didn't have a haircut. It's like from Burton's or something.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, not tailored in any way.
Looks like you're going to court.
Yeah.
I don't know the
or
suit.
Or I was like, take, I was I going for an audition of Bugsy Malone. Oh. Yeah. It was bad.
Oh, man. Hip-hop gripes.
Is there anything about hip-hop that you're not so keen on? There doesn't have to be an answer for this.
It's, I think, like, I've grown to appreciate how auto-tune can be used. I think actually Kanye is someone who has made me really love like how auto-tune can be used. He doesn't overuse it, and he uses it in a way that I find really expressive. Mm. But I think those whole albums where it kind of just keeps going, my ear kind of tunes out, and I can't kind of get into the DNA of what the music's trying to say, because it just sounds so. I'll tell you what it sounds like is that my kids can, you know, we've got an iPad at home, and they found GarageBand and they found the auto-tune thing.
Yeah.
And they put a beat on and they just start singing stuff about My Little Pony. And I'm like,
sounds good.
It's pretty damn close.
Sounds all right. I mean, that is.
It's pretty damn. Sometimes. And that's.
Can you imagine Tekashi 6ix9ine coming out with something like that, don't you?
So,
bitch.
I guess that if I had to, but I mean, even some of that I can kind of get with. Yeah. I'm pretty open ears music wise.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to say, I don't really believe in guilty pleasures. There can be tracks that really surprise me that I love. I can't think of one offhand. But
and what about in? Because I know you're about to go on tour.
No, I go on tour in March. So
you're going to tour in March.
I put an album out this year, and a new extended version is coming out pretty soon. But then I took some time. My wife and I have been trying to like work at different times, so we're not too busy. So I've been more at home recently, and then I'll go on tour next March.
Yeah. And your shows are—you obviously are a bit of a—you know—you're careful about what you do, and you work hard at your live shows. Do you find yourself seeing hip hop live shows and feel absolutely disgusted at the lack of the relative lack of effort that's gone into that? Bearing in mind that you're such a craftsman when it comes to yours.
I mean, one of the simplest shows I ever saw was a Nas live show, right, in London.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the craft was all in what he was doing.
Right, okay.
And I think it's interesting that, because sometimes I feel like with enough star power and charisma, craft is like comes into a different thing.
So it's not all about whiz bangs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen some bad hip hop shows.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to think. I can give you an example. Ones where I've just been like, you know, it's bad. They haven't worked on the sound at all. Yeah. There's like no kind of through line to it. And I've seen some amazing ones, but generally the ones with, you know, I've seen a couple of live Jay-Z shows which were just so good.
Yeah,
there was
a
lot of craft that went into. Obviously, the Roots, as we all know, they're like,
I mean,
one of the great live.
But what a band!
Yeah, it's so good. But then I saw I remember seeing Guru back in the day as well, and I just think, you know, he'd really like a proper kind of stage setup. And actually, the gigs I went to see gigs.
Yeah,
it was a small gig on an island outside of Essex, and. That was OC Island.
Oh yeah, that's OC Island.
And you can only access it at certain times of the day, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And his show, I mean, in terms of, it was all him. You know?
Yeah.
He's actually one of my favourite kind of UK rappers of now. It was so good, just because he was.
Yeah.
Just absolutely overflowing with like charisma.
He is. Got some charisma, that geezer. I went to see Kano at Royal Albert Hall recently. Yeah. He couldn't make it.
I didn't.
Was that huge, he did Jules Holland with me literally the day after.
Oh, really?
And
was he buzzing his tits off?
He was absolutely. He looked like he'd been kind of flattened. To be honest,
it might have been the best gig I've ever been to. In my life. God, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was honestly. Yeah.
I know a lot of people in that band.
Oh, really? Yeah. They were insane. But when gigs came out, the whole of the Royal Albert Hall just absolutely lost their minds.
It's interesting with Kano and Gig, because it's amazing how, like, they're, I mean, obviously people love them and they have big fan bases, but just how not, I'm always amazed that their fan bases aren't way more massive. But, but that's just the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
So would you say, was there a favourite gig of yours that you've been to?
Does it have to be hip-hop?
No.
Prince.
Really, yeah. When did you see Prince?
I saw Prince at La Scala, really small venues, one of those when he just turned up.
And, yeah.
There were just phone calls going around. I think that was probably one of the best ones I ever saw. It felt magic. Yeah. It felt magic. I felt like it wasn't possible. I felt like I was just witnessing like proper greatness.
Yeah, yeah.
And all those times where I feel angry that I never got to see Nina Simone or, right. you know, Jimi Hendrix or whatever. I was there going, I saw this.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's fine. I don't feel so bad.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
I'm going to see you very soon. Aren't I?
Right. It's slightly because different occasion.
Really appropriately for us two being on this hip hop podcast.
Yeah.
The next time Jamie and I see each other, it'll be at the rehearsals probably, but it'll be at the Royal Variety performance.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Correct answer.
So you're on tour, and what else have you got coming up? You're reissuing this album.
Yeah,
right?
So the album I made that's called Taller that came out this spring is having another kind of hurrah coming out because people loved it so much the first time that we are re-releasing it the second time. But actually, it's interesting because it's my eighth record, and it's by far and away like the thing I'm most proud of that I've ever
really,
done.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, it's just I've just put my stake in the ground. I'm focusing more on songwriting than I ever have before.
Right.
You know, and I wrote 10 songs that I feel like, from my point of view, are kind of bulletproof songs. They're like they exist in their own right, and I feel really kind of proud to be like talking about it and putting it out again. It's been a good experience.
Cool. So if you want to see Jamie live, we'll get the album, you know what to do. I got to say to you, man, we send, just letting the listeners behind the curtain here, but we send the questions out ahead of time just to sort of get a heads up on it. And as soon as we got your answer, I thought, fuck, Jamie's actually a hip hop fan. Like, do you know what I mean? Because you're sort of like, I didn't doubt it.
Yeah.
But you know, there's certain artists you get in, go, okay, cool, that makes sense. Mm. But like, you know, you're not fucking about, man. Like, you do love your hip hop, which is great, man.
Well, it's great. I love the show, and it's great to listen to. I mean, it's great to listen to someone like Mark Ronson, for example. When that level of kind of knowledge, but also like he was there and made some of those records as well.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. When he was talking about playing in the club with like the Bad Boy guys and then the Rockefeller guys.
Yeah, Jay-Z leaning over the booth.
Yeah. Woof. Yeah. I know, that's the real stuff.
Yeah, I've not. I once MC'd at Greenwich Uni.
That's good.
Anyway. Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, man.
Thank you both. It's been wicked to be here.
I'm looking forward to
introducing,
talking to you in a similar vein.
Yeah.
At the Royal Variety.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be a good gig on somewhere afterwards that we could go to.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
To decompress.
But the truth is like, you have to be a certain way at the Royal Variety, don't you?
Yeah. Who is the Royals? Is it the Queen?
It's not been announced yet, so I couldn't possibly tell you.
Right.
But it might be by the time this comes out, so I can tell it's Kate and Will.
The best ones.
That's so they say. So they say. I haven't had the chance to rate them in person.
Yeah.
But I have met the Queen, so I'll tell you what, I'll mark them. Against.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, we'll have to get you back on and we can do ratings and stuff.
That's great. It's what the people want.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie Cullum rating the Royals. Yeah.
Jamie, you've been amazing, man. Thank you so much.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.